906.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When you think of America's great music schools, you think Juilliard in New York City, the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York, Peabody in Baltimore, and now Catawba College in Salisbury. For 6 years running, Catawba has been named by the country's leading music education magazine as one of the nation's best music schools. Part of the reason for that is the school's popular music degree program, one of only 12 in the country. And that program is also gaining the attention of the music industry. That's one reason that legendary Grammy-winning producer Ken Calais is collaborating with Catawba. He has produced music for the likes of Paul McCartney, Joni Mitchell, and his own daughter, Colby, and Fleetwood Mac. He was behind several of the group's biggest sellers, including the famed Rumours album. The collaboration between Ken Calais and the college, Catawba College, is part of the school's attempt to create a special academy for highly talented young artists interested in performing, recording, and producing popular music. And he joins us for the hour to fill us in, along with Dr. David Lee Fitch, chair of the music department at Catawba College. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have to tell you again, I just told you off the air, this is one of my favorite albums of all time. I'm just curious how many times you think you've heard that song.
Too many. Far too many.
Also with us are two popular music majors at the school, Emma Stoneberg and Olivia Albertson. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You're going to get your, I think, your radio debut today. We're going to play a little bit of two of the songs that you have written and recorded in a few minutes. So are you on pins and needles? I would be.
Just a little bit.
Have they been played on the radio before?
Not yet. Not for me, at least.
Nope. This is their debut.
Wow. Well, good. Incidentally, a group of Catawba College students who call themselves the Vernaculars will be performing Fleetwood Mac's Rumours album live tonight at Hedrick Little Theater at 7:30. Following the performance, Ken Calais will be signing his book, Making Rumours, the inside story of the classic Fleetwood Mac album. We have information about that on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. When did the popular music major become a major at Catawba College, Doctor?
We're just finishing up our 11th year this year.
Why did it start? It's an odd thing to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but there are only 12 in the country.
Yep, so it's that's
not,
right. That's
it
right.
Seems odd to me that a college would have a popular music major.
Yeah, you know, there are about 1,500 four-year colleges and universities in the country, and as you said, there are only maybe about a dozen of us that have developed, you know, full curricula for popular music, and that's the reason for starting it. You know, I was a young popular musician. I mean, I was a singer-songwriter that fancied myself being the next Harry Chapin, but I had also been, before that, I'd been a jazz musician. I'd been a jazz saxophonist, and there was wonderful jazz education out there, even in the ancient times when I went to school, but there was absolutely, when I changed, I wanted to become a singer-songwriter, there was absolutely nothing in terms of formal education.
Is this what brought the two of you to Catawba as students? Because it offered a popular music major?
Yes.
Had you been working, writing music, singing music, playing music prior to going to college? Obviously, the answer is probably yes.
Yes.
Given the fact that, you know, rock and roll really kind of moved people away from education, music education, and people grabbed a guitar and went to the garage and learned how to play and had great success and made lots of money, some people, it's obvious that people without training can make it in popular music. Mm-hmm. So why bother?
Well, but a lot of these albums that came out, I think, inspired students to come learn all the parts and be careful and learn the parts very carefully to articulate what somebody else accidentally did. Back in the 70s, these people made music from their heart only, and you know, but they just had self-taught themselves. But since then, I think a lot of the students have been mimicking the likes of Rumors albums, and hopefully turning that into new music.
That's the voice of Ken Kaleh, who has produced a number of more records than probably I can count over the years, and certainly engineered even
you
more
can
than
count
that. Okay, well, you produced the Rumors album, and very few people understand what record producers, music producers, there are no records anymore, what music producers do. So give us a lesson in a nutshell.
Well, it's kind of like being a kindergarten teacher. Honestly, it is, because musicians, they come into the studio, they don't know what they're going to do that day. They don't know if they're going to be great. They don't know if they're going to be inspired. They don't know what's going to inspire them. They don't have a script. There's nothing to tell them what they're doing. And so they're always looking for that inspiration in whatever they're doing. And hopefully, and often they have to wear their heart on their sleeves, kind of like they'll sing out of tune to me or make a stupid guitar note. And you know, you just keep saying, no, okay, let's head over to a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. And you keep, when they do something good, you have to notice it and say, that was, by the way, what you did 10 seconds ago was great. And they'll go, what did I do? I'll play it back for you. And then they'll go, oh, wow, this is great. So you're just keeping them in line.
You know, I know what studio time costs. It's a lot of money. So it seems to me to be really foolish to do albums that way. And we'll talk about how Fleetwood Mac did the Rumors album. But to go in there with not a plan, with nothing written on paper, with no arrangements, with no songs written, with no lyrics written, and sit in the studio and do that seems terribly expensive to me.
It was. It was about $1 million.
So why not write it and then go into the studio and record it?
Because when the idea happens and you get the sound and you get the texture of the music, you need to put it down then. You could certainly do it other ways, in less expensive studios, in your garage studios, things like that. But back then, the collaboration they did created 44 million sales, album sales.
Yeah. But you didn't know that going in.
We didn't know that at all. That's what I say. You don't know what you're going, how it's going to do.
Yeah. And part of it is the magic. Some of the magic of popular music is the creativity that comes out of those recording sessions. Certainly, there are lots of groups that rehearse and know exactly what they're going to do when they go into the studio, and you can get good recordings that way. But, you know, to go into a studio and have just an outline of what you're going to do and 3 hours later come out with a song that was formed, that was born during those 3 hours, there's something just remarkable about that.
But you know, in 1977, when you did Rumors, you had to have an engineer and with a big console and a glass dividing you from the recording studio area, and then you had to have microphones and all this. Today, kids can go into their dorm room, maybe you've done this, I don't know, with GarageBand on a Mac and a microphone that you plug into the USB port, and you're in business. You're a recording studio. Is that true?
I don't know about that. For me, it's I have a way that I can do that on my computer. Uh-huh. But for me, going in the studio, you get the full experience of recording drums and keys and everything. But whenever you're in your own little room, you know, usually you can only record acoustic guitar, or keys, or vocals, or something like that. And so, getting the whole full band experience—that's
yeah,
that's
what I like
about
and it's
it.
A bit like Mike. I don't know if you're old enough to remember the when we all started getting word processors, and there was this, you know, great idea that we're all going to be authors, we're all going to be poets, because now we all have Microsoft Word. Doesn't necessarily, just because you have the hardware and the software, doesn't necessarily.
You have to know what to do with it, and that's where you come in. People like you come in, and you have a background as an engineer, not just a producer.
I was an engineer. I started by engineering the Rumors album. I got hired. I got shifted over to producing. They said, listen, while you're sitting there turning the knobs, we want you to start paying attention to tempos and pitch and keys and vibe and feel. And are we stepping over each other? And I said, so they were, Fleetwood Mac hired me basically and said, start being a producer, and we're going to be patient while you learn to be a producer.
Wow.
And so I was a very lucky guy.
This is really interesting because I was trying to think when they came into my consciousness, and they came into my consciousness, not the album before Rumors with songs on it like Say You Love Me and Rhiannon. That's when
much
I think
softer
I first,
Fleetwood Mac.
I mean, although they had been in existence since the 60s in Britain, I didn't know who they were. You didn't know who they were until you worked on this. That's fascinating to me. You did not know who they were when you went to work with them.
That's right. Well, I did by then, but I didn't know the names of the people or anything. But interestingly, they had done 11 albums as a blues album because Mick and John became Fleetwood Mac without it, but they didn't. They were only a backup band, so they needed somebody to play in front of them, and that was Peter Green, Jeremy Spencer, Bob Welsh, and then when all these front singer, writer, guitar players left, they had to find somebody new. Yeah. They found these two California hippies, and who played folk music?
Maybe Stevie Nicks and
exactly Lindsey Buckingham.
Yeah,
and they married this hardcore blues band with this hippie stoned
flower power
California.
In your book you say that Fleetwood Mac is an unlikely mix of opposites, old and new, mm-hmm. English and American, male and female, with contrast between being unknown and famous, blues and rock, alcohol and pot. The only constant was every member's relentless talent.
Correct.
Now you wrote this book about this experience of recording this album and producing this album. I'm just curious how you can remember any of it, given the the alcohol and pot.
Well, I was driving.
Right? Designated.
Yeah, I was a DD. And it was a thrill for me to – I think I say in the book, you know, I've been always lucky. You know, for me to come in there – I mean, I saw Dreams born. I saw all these songs born. That's you talk about why not you know, why do it in the studio, you know, the whole chain, the whole end of the song with the bass line, boom ba ba boom ba 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 boom boom, and then the guitar solo, that was one take, that was not planned, that just was accidental. The vibe of the track built up to that, and it just released, and we got it on tape and hated the rest of the song, but had to figure out a way to save it. And we took us another song, lyrics, and edited it and made that into the... But that happened. That wouldn't have happened if we had been anywhere else.
You know, with digital technology, you can do almost anything to manipulate and massage things. Back then, you were using, what, one-inch tape?
Two-inch tape.
Two-inch tape, my gosh. With what, how many, 32 tracks, something like that?
24 tracks.
24 tracks.
And a razor blade.
Yeah, and a razor blade, so because you couldn't go... You can overdub, but... To really move things around, you had to have a razor blade and move the large pieces of tape from one place to another. When you look back on that, do you wonder that you could do it? Because that's when I look back on that, I think, how did we do all that without digital?
Well, yeah, you know, I did a lot of things that I didn't know couldn't be done.
That's right.
You know. We just went ahead and did it, you know. The
ignorance
show's got to go on.
Yeah, ignorance is bliss. You just do it.
Yeah.
But it has to be incredible. It has to have been incredibly laborious to do it.
It was exhausting. I mean, thank God I was 29 years old.
Wow. And at the same time this band was going through, when you were doing Rumors, they were going through this tremendous turmoil, which I want to talk about when we come back from the break because we don't have time to get into it here.
Okay.
But it's a miracle that they didn't kill each other in the course of doing this album. It's a miracle that the album ever got done, which makes it even more of a miracle that it was such the success.
I think it's a great American story.
Okay. And we'll tell it.
Yeah.
We'll tell it in a second. Ken Kelly is a record producer, Grammy-winning record producer, author of Making Rumors, the inside story of the classic Fleetwood Mac album. Dr. David Lee Fish is with us, chair of the music department at Catawba College, and Emma Stoneberg and Olivia Albertson are also here, two students, and we'll hear their music coming up in a few minutes. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Secret Chocolatier, celebrating Mother's Day with handmade edible chocolate roses, keepsake boxes, and decorative plates of baked goodies. Located in Ballantyne and off Providence Road, thesecretchocolatier.com. Plastic. You may not like it, but plastic has changed our lives. And as a result, can be found in almost everything, and that's the problem. Plastic in bottles, in packaging, in bags, toys, you name it, it just won't go away. Well, we hope people recycle it, but a lot of people aren't, and much of it is ending up in landfills, in our creeks, in our rivers, in our oceans. We're going to meet some folks trying to educate us all on the pollution caused by plastic and what we can do to lessen the negative effects. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Nigeria has accepted a U.S. offer to help rescue nearly 300 schoolgirls abducted in the last month. The terrorist organization claiming responsibility says they've been taken as slaves. The latest on their plight and efforts to save them.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the new, well, not the new, but the popular music major at Catawba College, and this is the result.
Don't fall for her. She'll just leave you again. You think you're the only man. Don't fall for her. Don't give in. Even though your lips want to, her kiss it haunts you. Don't fall for her.
It's the radio debut.
Yeah.
Of Emma Stoneberg and her song called Don't Fall for Her.
Yeah.
I love the way you end the phrase, don't fall for her. It's, you kind of, you don't bite into it. You just kind of let it go, almost like.
Float away.
Yeah, you float away. That was intentional?
Yeah. It was just, you know. Ending on, it actually ends on the C9 chord, and then you just kind of just let it hang there and let the moment kind of just sink in, you know?
Ends on the C9 chord. Listen to you.
I know, right? I learned stuff at the college. Like I'm a student or something.
A C what?
So you are, you're singing? Are you playing piano?
Not in this recording. I did do the piano, like I wrote the music for it, but we actually had Wes Lachaud, who teaches our songwriting two class, to piano for me.
And you wrote the lyrics?
Yes.
How did it all come together?
That's actually, this song was written in our songwriting class at Catawba College. We had to do an AABA format, which is, you know, verse, verse, bridge, verse.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically, when I write, I just come up with a chord progression, spit a lot of words out, and hopefully it sounds good. And conveniently this time, you know, it just kind of came together.
How long did it take you?
This song, I feel like, you know, when like your song's going to be pretty, you know, like this is going to be pretty good. Cause it just came out in about like a half an hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
And are you, I'm not going to ask which comes first, the music or the lyrics. That's a silly question. But when you hear these progressions in your head, does the music suggest the lyric? Does the lyric suggest the music? Do the two cooperate with each other, or do they sometimes have a battle that you have to resolve?
Yeah, the two, they usually tend to, you know, work together pretty well. I actually, interestingly enough, I started out just kind of, I just sing out loud. You know, like when you sing in the shower, right. Just create melodies and stuff. But with this class, it really, you know, forced you to think of different chord progressions and different, you know, ways to form the chords and kind of just create a really nice combination with your melody. So they both kind of inspired each other.
How many songs had you written prior to going to college?
None.
How many songs had you written prior to going to college, Olivia?
Just a few, mainly in like the last couple years of high school before I got in.
And how many songs have you written since this program?
Wow.
Countless amount.
I'd probably say, I'm a junior now, so I would say maybe 20 and above.
So you're building up a little repertoire of your own music.
Yeah.
It's a rough business. We'll talk about that in a second. We're talking to Emma Stoneberg and Olivia Albertson, who are popular music majors, one of only 12 such majors in the country, at Catawba College, which has been named for 6 years running as one of the best music schools in the country. Dr. David Lee Fish is with us. He's the chair of the department there. And Ken Kalay is here. He's the Grammy Award-winning record producer and author of Making Rumors, the inside story of the classic Fleetwood Mac album, because he produced that album. At the time you produced that album, that band was going through significant turmoil, including several divorces among members of people in the band.
That's true.
Who had to come in and face each other in a recording studio every day and write these songs and collaborate when they hated each other. How did you channel all of that negativity into something so special?
Well, I was basically lazy. I couldn't deal with their fighting, so I just tried to pick the you guys, whoever's not fighting, let's work. You guys are fighting, go somewhere.
Now, so Christine McVie and her husband John were splitting up during the production of the Rumors album. She recorded a song that appears on Rumors that turned out to be an incredibly big hit and one of my favorites on the album, and I'm going to ask you how they sang this song, given what they were going through. You make love and fun. The trail out on that song is the two women singing repeatedly, "You make love and fun, it's all I want to do." Given what was going on at the time, how did they come up with the lyric? How could they sing it?
Well, they had already written the lyrics. The lyrics were not an issue. Remember, these songs, because they were all breaking up, all the lyrics were salt in the wound of somebody in the room. And so we did this album over a year, and it kept festering. The whole, when John heard this, it was about another guy, and so it hurt him, and it reminded Stevie and Lindsey that they were breaking up too. I remember a time when Stevie and Lindsey were sitting on a stool in front of one microphone singing the harmonies of "You Make Love and Fun," and they stopped, and I stopped the tape or something, and they turned around and started swearing at each other, and you cheated, and you did this, and I hit play, and they went right back to you.
That's professionalism.
but I'll tell you something that's really interesting. The what happened on the first album, they really lit a fire with that album. It was catching on with the world. The folk and the blues parts of the band started to fuse together in the space between when we started doing Rumors. So when we actually came in to do Rumors, the lawyers said, the previous album looks like it's going to be a hit. It was still on the radio. Mm-hmm. And they said, if you can keep focus and make this record a hit, you will be superstars. You'll never have to worry again. So I remember Stevie one day saying, look, okay, we're obviously all breaking up. Everybody's crying, people throwing champagne in faces. But let's be mature and let's be professional and let's get this thing done. Do we all shake on it? We know it's going to hurt. We know we got another 10 months to go, but let's just be professional. Let's make this record. And everybody said, okay. And I thought it was amazing that through all that pain, the lyrics and all that stuff, they said, we're just going to keep our eye on the ball because we want to be stars.
You say that an album like Rumors could not be made today. Why not?
Because today's technology is too lazy. Mm. You know, today's technology, you don't have to think about it right now. You put music out there, and we'll work on the sounds later on. We'll figure out how the parts go together. Back when we did 24 track, you had a ton of mics going on to a few tracks, and you had to make decisions every second as a band. You know, the engineer, I'd be working on a kick drum sound, and on that song that you just played, You Make Love and Fun, there's a clav, there's a bass, there's other things. There's a lot of stuff going on, so I got to make sure that the kick drum can be heard.
Right.
So I'm actually moving mics around and EQing and adding treble to the kick drum mic and making sure it fits perfectly with the rest of the track. So it requires me to have all the rest of the musicians playing, and I'll contour the shape of the keyboard, maybe. So I maybe take a little bit of bass out of the keyboard so there's room for the bass player to play, and that'll be heard, and then the kick drum's got to fit in between. So we made an acoustic picture while we were going on everything. That doesn't ever happen anymore.
Because it can all be done in post today?
Yeah. It can't be done in post. That's the point.
Yeah. I mean, how do you do it then?
It could be done in post, but I keep telling people, you get out there and EQ the input going to the tape machine or the Pro Tools. And if you do that, a lot of times you'll find that what you thought was going to happen when you turn the knob may not be really happening. And you might have to get out of your chair and walk out to the musician and maybe move the mic a little bit, maybe have the musician play with a pick. If it's talking about you want a brighter guitar, you have to be proactive. So that doesn't happen anymore.
During one of these songs, I'm told, you had one of the guitar, was it Mick Fleet? Was it Fleet? You had the guitar restrung every 20 minutes.
Right.
Because the sound got brighter as the 20 minutes went on? Or?
Well, I love the sound of an acoustic guitar when it has new strings on it. It just really...
bright and jangly.
Yeah, and just, you know, alive. And so I said, I just love that this was never going back again, a picking song with a lot of parts. And I said, if you just indulge me, Lindsay. And he said, sure, whatever. I mean, the roadies hated me, but I said, I'd like to change the strings every 20 minutes. So he said, okay. So literally after 20 minutes, you can hear the strings aren't as vocal as they were. So then we would change the mic. So we worked all day and we're doing different guitar parts. And literally at about midnight, interesting story, I said to Lindsay, I said, I got all these parts here. I kind of need a roadmap on how I'm going to put it together. I said, if you could sing a lead vocal for me, I could see where it goes and put everything together. And so he kind of refused. We worked another hour and I said, vocal now, please. He goes, fine. And so I start playing from the top of the tape. He starts singing, and he realizes suddenly it's in the wrong key. We had recorded the song in the wrong key. It was so far in the wrong key, I couldn't change the pitch or anything to catch it up. So we called it a night, and the next day we went back and re-recorded all the guitars, and guess what? We didn't change the string in once.
Wow.
We were just going to get it done.
You know, popular music is popular because it connects with people. And I'm sure that there are people in classical music, in opera, in classical instrumental music that wish that today their music connected the way pop music does. Does that provide friction within the department since you have this popular music major?
It could. But, you know, fortunately, as a department, all of my colleagues, we share this vision of music being inclusive, and there being, you know, the boundaries that we put between different styles of music are, to a large extent, artificial. Mm-hmm. They don't need to be there, right? And you can see that with artists like Bobby McFerrin and Wynton Marsalis and so forth, or Yo-Yo Mob, who don't necessarily buy that there's classical music and there's popular music, and never the twain shall meet.
And I'm curious how you teach popular music, because popular music means so many different things. There's so many different kinds of popular music. What do you teach?
Yeah, you know, the first thing is first do no harm. You know, it would be very easy to institutionalize the study of popular music and create popular musicians who are out of step with the world of you know, professional popular music. So more than anything, believe it or not, it's actually fairly simple. It's giving an environment in which they can grow and be creative.
I once worked with a guy in college radio, actually, who told me, because I was kind of an old fogey in college, you have to grow with the music or the music will outgrow you. And he was right, and nowhere is that more important than it would be, I think, for a music producer to be attuned to changes of taste. When you produced Fleetwood Mac in 1977, very different milieu than today, and you also produced your daughter's record, Colby.
Will you count me in?
Let's hear a little bit of Bubbly here.
I've been awake for a while now. You got me feeling like a child now. Every time I see a bubbly face, I get the tingles in a silly place. It starts in my toes and I crinkle my nose. Wherever it goes, I always know that you make me smile. Please stay for a while now. Just take your time wherever you go. The rain is falling on my windowpane, but we are hiding in a safer place. Undercover, staying safe and warm. You give me feelings that I adore. They start in my toes, make me crinkle my nose. Wherever it goes, I always know that you make me smile. Please stay for a while now. Just take your time wherever you go.
How old was Colby Calais when she wrote that song?
20 years old.
20 years old. And you told her to go to her room? Is that the story?
Well, yes, there's more to it than that. Interestingly enough, she was a singer from 11. She always sang, ran around the house, and I realized one day that she needed to do something. She needed to start writing songs, otherwise she'd be buying songs from other people, and she'd be getting the worst of the songs. So I told her, if you're going to be serious about this, I want you to start writing songs. And I told her the song structure, the song theory, and I offered her $100 a song. So she actually never had to pay her, but she says that no, but she just kept writing anyhow. But this song, anyway, she says, Dad, I haven't been writing in a long time. We had just moved to away from her friends at another house, and she says, Dad, I'm not writing so much anymore. I said, well, Colby, that's because you're always going out. I said, why don't you tell you what? Stay home today. It was a Sunday. Stay home today. I said, go up in your room, hang out all day. Get bored. I said, I promise, something will happen. She comes down to Sunday night. Dad, I wrote the song. And I thought, it's a cute song. I mean, it could go either way. Not like, oh, my God, that's a hit, but she honestly just wrote it in her room.
It's happy, and there's so many songs today that are not happy, and it falls into that category that Bruno Mars and Jason Mraz and others have seemed to capture in recent years, which I think is a positive move. But producing your daughter's music might have been I don't know this for a fact, but it just seems to me when you're producing somebody so close to you that it might have been more difficult than working with Fleetwood Mac in 1977, was it?
It was. It had its, it had its ups and downs. But because you have to be critical with your daughter, I know we spent a lot of time talking about her music. So while we did it, I'd say, I had this idea for the chorus section, this instrument we'll put under there, and at one point she says, Dad, I kind of don't like this because I really rather have you just as my dad, than just talking about being a producer. But because. Suddenly, we were talking about work, and it was kind of a weird relationship. But
it became a hit.
It became a hit, yeah.
So how does she feel about this now?
Oh, well, she loved it. I mean, back then, I paid to have the record made, and we recorded it at a friend's studio. Uh-huh. And my friend, her friend, put it up on MySpace, this song, and lo and behold, it went nuts. So at MySpace back then, you could share songs with other friends, and I think there were like 5 million people sharing her song. And Colby walked in one day and said, there's lawyers calling, there's managers calling, and it's going crazy. Dad, what can I do? So I got a manager for her, and suddenly this record just, it was like the horse ran out of the barn.
We have to take a break. We're coming back with more in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members at Diamonds Direct South Park, offering certified diamonds from their own diamond cutters in Tel Aviv, including rare colored diamonds and fancy cut diamonds. From 1 carat to 10 carats, Sharon Road across from South Park Mall, diamonds-direct.com. And McCall Center for Visual Art, offering a new Think Like an Artist series, June 5th and 6th, designed to help individuals activate their creativity. Details at McCallCenter.org. Coming up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, Nigeria has accepted a U.S. offer to help rescue nearly 300 schoolgirls abducted in the last month. The terrorist organization claiming responsibility says they have been taken as slaves. Guest host Susan Page talks with a panel of experts on the girls' plight and the latest on efforts to save them. That's in 20 minutes. If you'd like to join our conversation about music at Catawba College or Fleetwood Mac, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is the place to start. We're coming right back.
In a fast-paced world, it's sometimes hard to separate fact from fiction. And that's where NPR's weekday news program, Morning Edition, comes in. We'll help you fend off information overload by bringing you the news that matters most. I'm Renee Montaigne. Tune out the fiction and tune in to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Comprehensive, in-depth morning news, weekdays from 5 till 9 on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Ken Kelly, legendary Grammy-winning producer of Rumours by Fleetwood Mac, author of Making Rumours, the inside story of the classic Fleetwood Mac album. Also with us, Dr. David Fish, because the two of these folks, Dr. David Fish is the chair of the music department at Catawba College, are collaborating on an effort, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, as part of their popular music program. Also with us, two students. We've already heard the radio debut of Emma Stone. Stoneberg's recording, and now Olivia Albertson. This is something completely out of the box that we've been talking about. Let's go to Nashville for a second here. Nothing Good Happens After Midnight is the name of that. That's Olivia Albertson's song. They say writers write what they know. I'm just curious if this is...
No, this is not coming from personal experience, I promise.
Her no. Professor does not want to know if it is.
No, it's not.
This is sort of that modern country sound that you hear on the TV show Nashville, which I think is a wonderful show because the music in that show is just great. This could be on that show.
Thank you. That would be awesome if it could.
What was the process here for this?
For this, usually whenever I write a song, the hook just comes straight to my head. So for this, you know, the Nothing Good Happens After Midnight, that just came into my head. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to write a song about that. So I sat down one night. I think it took me like an hour to write this one. But yeah, usually whenever I write songs, the hook just comes to my head, and wow. I write the rest of the lyrics.
But it's a very catchy tune. The beat is, it just fits.
Thank you.
How long did it take to record it? And that's you singing the lead, right? How many other people were involved in all of this?
Let's see. I played the acoustic guitar. There was an electric guitarist, drummer. I think it took us 3 sessions.
Did total. You lay it down all at once, or are there parts? Did you do it in parts?
Oh, we did it in parts.
Why? It seems to me that you'd want to get that feel of everybody playing together, but you're shaking. You're saying no. No. Why not?
Because nobody's that smart. You need the control. You need to fix little things.
It's Frank like, Sinatra would build it like that. Why can't these people?
Nobody build a house in one day, right? So you have to build the foundation, then you have to put the sides on it and the top on it. And, you know, it's really an art form. So Frank Sinatra had charts, and so there was nothing mm-hmm. spontaneous except his lead vocal.
Right.
And that's the way he wanted it.
Well, it's because he couldn't read music either. Since Catawba College has had this popular music program, you've been producing lots of award winners. You've had mm-hmm. 5 mm-hmm. Finalists in the BMI John Lennon Songwriting Scholarship Competition, which draws thousands of entries mm-hmm. every year, including a first-place finisher. How do you hope this new collaboration with Ken will improve on what you're already doing?
This is just an absolutely wonderful opportunity for Catawba. It started essentially because person that works for Ashley or for Ken Ashley Culp, and who I've known for a number of years, was asking, well, you know, are there things that are left undone or haven't been completed when students graduate from Catawba? And I said, yeah, you know, they come out wonderful musicians often and great songwriters, but there's not fully professional performers yet. You know, that has to do with stage presence. It has to do with image. It has to do with
opportunities,
right. And that's just with Catawba and those other, you know, the other 11 schools that you were talking about, the 12, none of us, you know, have that ability within the limits of our curricula to, train the students in to that. And it used to be when the record industry was hale and hearty that, you know, they'd sign a very talented but inexperienced artist, and then the record company would develop that talent. But that doesn't happen anymore. So this is just an opportunity, and partly based on Ken's experience developing artists, including his daughter, of just it was originally called, the nickname for it was the Roxford, as in Rock Oxford Finishing School. but our target audience, including Emma and Olivia, thought that was so lame that we came up with a different name for it.
And the new name is the Landmark Academy for the Arts. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's correct.
Whose idea was it? Was it the school's idea? Was it Ken's
it's
idea?
Ken's Who's, vision.
It was
Ken's
your vision. Is it your name? Did you give him the name?
No, I did not know.
Okay. It was Ken's idea.
Yeah.
Why?
So many students who graduate from engineering school, production school, don't get a job. They can't be hired. They're not trained to be sophisticated enough to work, let's say, with an Elton John at a studio. So many of these studios don't hire people. In addition, my daughter, because she got pulled in so quickly into the music business, I had to race out and hire vocal coaches. I had to hire stage coaches to work with her image and bring out her image. And this was very important for us. I realized I can provide that on a repeated basis to these. If we just take the top students who graduate from other schools and put them through this finishing school with, and have them meet top record producers, top songwriters, top singers, to work one-on-one with them, will actually make a real-time situation.
But you live in California,
yes.
Right? How did you even know about Catawba College?
Through Ashley Culp. Who's a colleague. We've been writing a book on music, television, and marketing together. And I know Ashley because his nephew went to Catawba College, so he knows our popular music.
And Ashley works at my company, my record company, so he heard me start talking about this and at Christmas told Dr. Fish.
One of the things about Fleetwood Mac, when you worked with them in 1977, was the fact that they were just then coming, they were one album into this new partnership with the McVees.
Right.
And they really didn't know how to work together yet. They didn't know what kind of a band they really were because they were coming from these two different venues, and they kind of discovered that in the course of rumors. But they were all seasoned performers, I take it. They all knew how to be on stage, correct?
They all loved looking at themselves in the mirror.
And that's the secret.
I used to know that was what's different between them and me. We'd walk by a mirror and they would all be broken.
Well, let's hear another song from the Rumors album. This was a hit twice over. It was a hit first because of the album Rumors, and then it was a hit again when Bill Clinton chose it as his campaign song, which is what I remember it from, quite honestly. Here it is. Again, this song is so optimistic, and it happened while this group was breaking up personally. How did they do it? It's so optimistic. Yesterday's gone. Let's move on. Was this written and recorded after they decided, hey, we might be really successful if we have another hit album?
Nope. This was recorded the first few weeks. Christine, we drove up to Sausalito, California from L.A. to record the album and get away from all the pressures and the friends and the attorneys and everybody else. And so all the guys lived together in a house, and the girls lived together in the hotel in Sausalito. So one night, Christine wrote the song feeling relieved that she had gotten away from John, and she had a new boyfriend, the lighting director, Curry Grant. So she was thrilled, and from her heart, she wrote the song in about an hour.
Wow.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
In your book, I'm going to ask you if this is you talking. You say, somebody says, I never really liked this song. It was the first shuffle I ever worked on. I didn't like the drum sound either. Maybe it's because it started out kind of slow.
That's
you?
Me. Yeah.
Have you changed your mind?
Nope.
Why not?
As an engineer, I just didn't like the way it started. It was just so soft and mushy. And
that's what I like about it, because it's so un-rock.
Is.
And yet it becomes rock as the guitar starts coming in.
Right.
It has a groove to it.
And you know, that song was really one of the first songs that they started developing their anthem style, where they, at the end of the song, they instead of using the same lyrics, they turn it around. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Yesterday's gone. Mm. And then they make this,
don't you look back.
Right.
Yeah.
And they make this big anthem out of the backgrounds at the end. And Fleetwood Mac is really the... came up with that idea. They did it on The Chain. They did it on Love and Fun.
When you hear this music from 1977, which is before you were born.
Yeah.
This is like me, I guess, listening to music from the 1930s. What do you think?
Well,
how does it hit you?
Well, my mom is a huge Fleetwood Mac fan, so I grew up listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's pretty nostalgic.
Because my father loved Harry James and Benny Goodman, and I appreciate it, but it wasn't my music.
You know, I feel like there's such a large respect, though, for the music, you know, back in the 70s and the 60s that, you know, kind of paved the way for music now, you know?
Yeah, I think there's also, there's a great divide between the jazz era and the rock era. Mm-hmm. This is still at least part of the rock era.
And yet you seem to grab, maybe that one song is an aberration, but I'm going to guess that you are a country music person. Am I wrong?
Oh, yes, yes.
So when you hear this, although country has stolen elements, adopted elements of rock, which has propelled it into even greater popularity than ever before, do you relate to this kind of music because of the beat and because of whatever, the guitars, whatever?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Whenever I first started listening to this album, it was just every song hit me. This has turned out to be one of my favorite albums. I think every track I can relate to.
I would say lyrically, too.
Oh, absolutely.
There's so much to relate to lyrically.
Absolutely.
And harmonically. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were really, there's kind of a, not a Phil Spector wall of sound, but it's big. It's a big sound.
Big. We filled every little nook and cranny over a year. It took us to find the right colors.
I have to ask you a question about a song that when it came out, I really didn't like, and you produced it. but I've done a 180.
It happens.
No, I've done a 180 on this song, and I'm not certain why. Here it is. This is not on the Rumors CD. This is several years later. It starts with these drums that go on for a long time before some sparse vocals begin. This is Tusk. I was a music director of a radio station when this came out, and I put this on the turntable. We still had turntables back then. And I thought, what is this? And then I found out that you used the UCLA marching band in the background for this thing. I thought, what is this? I love this song.
Very infectious.
Yes, it is. And are you aware that the Americans, the TV show The Americans, used this as the underscoring for the first scene of the first episode of that series?
No.
It was brilliant. Mm. I mean, I thought, what is this? I know this song. What is this? And it was Tusk. And it just set the episode up and set the series up perfectly.
Interesting.
You get residuals for that, I hope?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where did the idea come from to use the UCLA marching band, which you don't really hear?
It's actually USC marching band.
Oh, USC, excuse me.
It was Mick's brainchild. He's always thinking of some angle, you know, and he thought if we could use a marching band, we could use it. And when we go on tour, we'll use the Oslo marching band, and we'll use Detroit marching band, and we'll get all city participation. So he thought it was a genius idea.
It is. It's an early promoter. Oh, he's an early marketer.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we had already recorded the track Tusk, which I never really liked the song, and probably was why we added the horns to make it more interesting. And you know, it was kind of a adolescent look at sexuality and everything. And all the guys were, oh, this is really cool. We're talking about Tusk, and
I don't even know what that means, and I don't think I want to know.
Right. Well, wait. They made T-shirts for us that said "Get Tusk." So, but yeah, it was. And then we added the USC marching band, and that was a quiet. And we recorded it at Dodger Stadium, and we had the entire stadium to ourselves. And I took my wife on her first date there, and she was very impressed with me.
So, what do you think over time the result of this collaboration between Catawba College and Ken Kalay will be? How will it change things up?
Well, next time you're here, I think we're going to have 7 or 8 Emmas, and we're going to have a lot more stars here.
Are you working with Ken right now, the two of you?
Well, I'm a junior, so I've been involved in the, you know, project, I guess, since the creation of The Start, and then Olivia.
And then I'm a member of the band that's going to be performing tonight, and so...
Right. Oh, yeah, right. We both are.
Yeah, we both are.
Right, that's good.
We have the audacity of performing all of the Fleetwood Mac Rumors album with Ken Kalay, the producer, in the audience tonight.
Yeah. It's
a wee bit intimidating.
Nerve-wracking.
I'm saving Stoneberg. All my texting for later.
Emma Stoneberg, Olivia Albertson, two students in the popular music department, popular music major at the Catawba College, Dr. David Lee Fish, who's the chair of the department there, and Ken Kalay, Grammy Award-winning producer, author of Making Rumors, the inside story of the classic Fleetwood Mac album, a part of which you are hearing now. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you.